Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on critical condition when we come back. The lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school, and this class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the scene of the alleged crime, and what you should say to the police or investigators, and what you ought not to say to the police. And you'll learn how to conduct yourself and your case at bail setting, arraignment, pleadings, motion hearings, trial, and appeal. And you'll learn how to ask questions, cross-examine adverse witnesses, select a jury, introduce exhibits and evidence, and conduct discovery, do legal research, and follow the rules of court. In all, there are just 28 elements, 28 things to learn in courtroom strategy and procedure. And rule one is that all of the evidence that your opponent is going to use against you is going to be furnished by you. So keep your mouth shut and don't say anything, and then shut up. And after rule one is out of the way, we can get to the real business of winning your case. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Do it right now before you forget. George Gordon. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing a book called Critical Condition, written by Donald Bartlett, B-A-R-L-E-T-T, and James Steele, S-T-E-E-L-E, published by Doubleday, probably around $30. Dynamite book. If you want to know why it is that you're getting screwed by your HMO, these are the two boys that have detailed it and outlined it for you, and so this is the way the game is being played. We would not know unless some insider got the information together and put it out in front of us. And that's what these boys have done. They have put it out in front of us. So whether you're a customer buying insurance from an insurance company, or you're a doctor trying to get paid by the insurance company, you're getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. The insurance company is sticking it to both sides, all for their own personal profit. Hey, listen, it's nothing personal. You know, it's just business. Now, we're talking about, in this chapter, on Madison Avenue. How does Madison Avenue get involved in this medical business? So we took a look at Listerine. They were the first pharmaceuticals to mass advertise and to mass distribute and sell a product called Listerine. In 1997, the other big drug manufacturers got on the bandwagon, and they started promoting prescription drugs. Prescription drugs. So it's a fairly recent phenomenon, this thing of selling Lipitor and these potent, powerful drugs. You watch it on television, you become convinced that this is for you. You go to your doctor and say, give me a prescription for this Lipitor or something, and then we find out that it causes, I don't know if it's Lipitor or something else, it causes heart disease or heart trouble or something like that. Several have been taken off the market over the past several years. All drugs are poisons. Any druggist will tell you that. All drugs are poison. We just administer this poison to counteract some other poison, to acquire a desired effect called treatment. We can't cure anything. We don't pretend to cure anything. We're not here to cure you. We are here to treat you. You've got a pain in your joints. We're not going to cure the pain in your joints. We're not going to get to the cause of that pain. We're not going to eliminate arthritis or rheumatism. We're going to give you a painkiller so that you can live with this disease. But we're not going to cure it. We're not going to cure your diabetes. We're just going to give you insulin so that we can treat it for the rest of your life. You're a cash cow. That's why Americans are so popular with the drug companies and the medical industry. In fact, we Americans spend $1.7 trillion a year. That's $1,700 billion a year. $1,700 billion. $1,700 billion a year on health care. Now, within a few years, an understaffed Food and Drug Administration was totally unable to keep up with the volume of television advertising, which skyrocketed back in 1997, and the drug companies pushed the envelope on their claims. Then a change in the regulatory process ordered by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in November of 2001 dragged out the notification period on the misleading ads so that by the time the FDA could issue a warning to a drug company, the offending commercial had disappeared. Even in the rare cases when a warning is issued, months go by, sometimes years, before the public is advised that they're watching and reading false claims. Now, in March of 2001, and again in December of 2001, the FDA sent out warning letters to Bristol-Myers Squibb Company objecting to the drug maker's unsubstantiated efficacy claims for Pravacol, a cholesterol drug. Nothing happened. So on August 7, 2003, the FDA sent a third letter complaining about the company's false or misleading promotional materials for its big-selling drug. More months went by. Finally, on February 20, 2004, Bristol-Myers published full-page advertisements in newspapers that carried this headline: Important Correction of Information About Pravacol. The correction, written with an obscurity unknown in commercials promoting drug usage, continued. It said, Bristol-Myers Squibb Company, makers of Pravacol, ran ads for Pravacol that the FDA determined were misleading. The statement they determined misleading was, Pravacol is the only cholesterol-lowering drug proven to help prevent first and second heart attack and stroke in people with high cholesterol or heart disease. This statement suggested that Pravacol has been proven to help prevent stroke in people without heart disease. Please note, Pravacol has not been proven to help prevent stroke in people without heart disease. Pravacol is proven to help prevent stroke only in people with coronary heart disease. Unquote. Now, a study by Consumer Reports showed that in 2002, the number of regulatory letters that the FDA sent manufacturers about false or misleading drug ads has dropped precipitously from more than 100 per year in the late 90s to just 24 letters sent out as of November 2002. And most disturbing, according to the Consumer Reports study, the letters revealed a broad and disconcerting range of misleading messages. Ads that minimized the product's risks, for example, or exaggerated its efficacy, or made false claims of superiority over competing products, or promoted unproved uses for an approved drug, or promoted use of a drug still in the experimental stage. Worse, many people appear to believe that drug advertising is meticulously regulated. Well, a study by researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles, and Davis involving 329 randomly selected Sacramento residents found that half the respondents wrongly believed that drug ads are pre-approved by the FDA, and 43% wrongly believed that only completely safe drugs can be advertised. Hey, we've already seen in this book that that's patently false. What's worse is the drug companies come on, and they overtly lie to you, and they know they're lying to you. And that's why they put those side effects in those written advertisements, so that as a matter of law, when you go in and sue because you got a wrongful death suit or something, well, gee, you were warned, you were told. Hey, we put it right on the package. Cigarette smoking causes cancer. Hey, we put it right on the package. The use of our product over here causes these types of side effects and these kinds of diseases. Well, prescription drug ads, a few of them screened for accuracy, are as prevalent as commercials for toothpaste and laundry detergent. Just turn on the television set anytime and you'll see a drug commercial. Begin with one of the morning shows, Good Morning America and Pfizer's Lipitor. A female announcer says, quote, for millions of adults with high cholesterol, diet and exercise are not always enough. But adding Lipitor can help lower your total cholesterol 29% to 45%. So take the next step. Ask your doctor if Lipitor is right for you. Unquote. Now, on the afternoon soaps, Novartis Pharmaceuticals pushes its Zelnorm for irritable bowel syndrome with constipation. On the evening news at CBS, it's Merck's Fosamax for osteoporosis in postmenopausal women. On the repeat of the Larry King live show on CNN at 12:30 a.m., it's Plavix. Bristol-Myers Squibb and Sanofi Pharmaceuticals sell Plavix to keep clots from forming and help protect against a heart attack or stroke. When necessary, Madison Avenue takes a page out of the Listerine sales manual to make a condition more appealing for treatment. That's what it did for erectile dysfunction, another brilliant success story in manipulating popular thought. Before Madison Avenue, erectile dysfunction was called impotence. But one doesn't ask Mike Ditka to help pass market, or help mass market rather, a Levitra for a condition called impotence, a word with a much different connotation. From 1970 to 1990, the words erectile dysfunction appeared in newspapers little more than a dozen times, about once every 6 months. The phrase instead was reserved for medical journals. That changed when the advertising specialists on Madison Avenue arrived and the FDA eased its prohibitions on pill advertising on television. In January 2004 alone, the words appeared in newspaper articles more than 200 times, and that doesn't count television commercials. The pharmaceutical industry likes to present this kind of approach as a public service. DTC must be understood as something more than mere advertising, says J. Patrick Kelly. He's the president of Pfizer U.S. Pharmaceuticals. We provide information that helps patients understand their conditions and their treatment options. Information that helps them have more mutually rewarding interactions with their physicians and helps them get diagnosed and receive appropriate treatment. Oh, give me a break. Let me put a mark here. What these guys are doing here is advertising. They call it a public service. It may be a public service to tell you that your erectile dysfunction can be treated by Levitor or some other drug. But the real purpose behind this is to sell the drug. And you wouldn't know anything about it. You wouldn't ask your physician. I mean, you don't go to the doctor's office and he says, hey, Bob, can you get it up? Oh, gosh, if you can't, well, we've got this new miracle drug that comes from the ABC pharmaceutical company. So first of all, we've got to get out here. There's 5 or 10 million men in America whose blood vessels are so plugged up from all the fat and crap that they ate down at McDonald's that they can't get it up anymore, so they need something else. So the drug companies come along and say, gee, don't stop eating fat. We wouldn't want to interrupt your pleasure down here at McDonald's. So you go ahead and keep eating all the crap, plug up your veins, and we got something here that'll take its place. So they advertise that in a mass market. Then you come along and you see this ad on the mass market and say, oh my God, look at this. So when you go into your doctor's office, it isn't your doctor that initiates the conversation. It's you, Joe. You're the one that initiates the conversation. You're the one that says, hey, doc, I can't get it up. Is there something you can do for me? Oh, Joe, you're just in luck. There's 3 or 4 products on the market. I didn't know that you were suffering from impotence. Oh, come on, doc. It's not impotence. It's erectile dysfunction. Oh, yeah, Joe, erectile dysfunction. And hey, we've got just the drug for you. By the way, I just saw the other day that this drug, oh, I forgot what it was. I don't want to bash anybody's profit margin here, but I don't know. They tested 35, 40 people, and there was some of them died, you know, kind of suddenly. Died taking these erectile dysfunction medications. But you can rest assured that the side effects are listed. I mean, you know, they tell you, hey, you know, 10, 15 people just dropped over dead and taking this drug. Actually, what it has done is changed prescription drugs from a needs-based product to a demand-driven product. You know, it used to be when you went to the doctor, you say, gosh, I'm suffering from this, that, and another thing, and the doctor said, okay, well, here's what we can probably do for you. That's needs-based or needs-driven. Now, we've changed this over. It's a demand-driven product. We advertise this to everybody in America. Now, those of us that don't need it and don't buy it, and those of us that say, well, gee, maybe I could use that, you go to your doctor, and if he won't give it to you, you just keep going to doctors until you find one that will. That's why doctors, you know, after all, you know, they're paid, you know, to treat, paid to give you advice. And they're like as not tell you, well, let's do something more intelligent than just give you a drug. But he knows that if he doesn't sell it to you, somebody else will. So he'll sell you whatever you want. Probably sell you heroin, you know, or cocaine or whatever, crack. I mean, after all, he knows it. And listen, I've done some programs on this. Of course, they don't call it heroin, cocaine, or crack. They've got other names for the same products. I mean, you can buy marijuana from your doctor. They've got the drug. I had a druggist here in school one day, and I didn't know this, but, you know, they just don't call it heroin. They got another name for it, and you get it prescribed, and you go in, and the pharmacist fills it out. Well, what you're taking is heroin. And then they got cocaine. Well, they got another name for that, and so what you're taking here is some drug trademarked item, and you go in and buy it. They've got all of that. And that's what makes them so mad. You see, they don't want you going down here on the street corner buying these drugs. They want you buying the licensed drugs. Do you know the cocaine down on the street corner? I forgot what he told me now. Heroin? I mean, when you go in and buy the legal heroin with a doctor's prescription, I think it's about 20 times more expensive than what you can buy it for out on the street. And you hear them talking about, hey, we busted these guys over here, and we caught them with $5 million worth of heroin, street value. Well, hell, when they sell that through the drugstore over there, it's 10 times that. It'd be $50 million worth if you bought it down at Rexall. Well, you can understand why the big drug companies don't want that stuff sold out on the street. Those guys are competing with them. You know, the drug dealers can provide your crack, cocaine, heroin. They can give you your marijuana for 1/10 what it costs you to buy that through the official sources down here at the prescription store. You know, when you look at it pragmatically, illegal drugs in America are a wonderful bargain. I mean, they're just dirt cheap compared to what you're spending down here at the drugstore. Actually, what it has done is changed prescription drugs from a needs-based product to a demand-driven product, just like Eggo, French toast sticks, Trix yogurt, and Apple Jacks. Advertisements and commercials that persuade people they will live a longer and healthier life if only they take daily medication to lower cholesterol and ease stress are out of the same advertising sales manual that suggests your social relationships will suffer unless you use a certain mouthwash called Listerine. It's all in advertising, boys and girls. We're going to convince you that you need this. Now, I've got to tell you a little story here. There's a fellow out here by the name of Joel Wallach. I think it's spelled W-A-L-L-A-C-H, Joel Wallach. He's a veterinarian. And he's married, and he has a wife, and she's a medical doctor, and he's a medical doctor, and he's a veterinarian, and he put out a tape. And in the tape, it's called, see if I remember the name of it here. Yeah, here it is. Why Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Why Dead Doctors Don't Lie. You talk about funny. I mean, it's better than the Three Stooges and Jack Benny all rolled into one. I mean, this guy's a comedian. He doesn't know it. He'd probably make a big hit on television, you know, as a stand-up comic. I couldn't stop laughing as I was listening to this guy's tape. Dead doctors don't lie. He says, do you know what the average lifespan of Americans is? He said it's 75.5 years. Yes, that's true. If you're just Joe Sixpack driving truck or Sally housewife doing dishes, well, you could expect on average to live to be 75.5 years. Now, do you know how long the average medical doctor lives? Well, it's 58 years. 58. Yeah, that's right. With all the drugs and all of the health care benefits that doctors have, with all their knowledge, all their experience, they live 17 and a half years less than you do. How much is that? Let's just take 17.5 and let's divide that by 75.5 and we get 23%. So medical doctors have a 23% shorter lifespan than the average guy. And he's got all the drugs and all the medications at his disposal to give him good health. And I'll tell you what probably causes these dead doctors to die. It's drug overdoses. And in one of his tapes, he's telling a story in here about doctors. And he says, did you know that 50% of doctors are on illegal drugs? Well, I mean, who could be a better source for heroin than a medical doctor who can prescribe heroin for himself? And so he went on, he said he told some stories about some medical doctors that had overdosed. You know, yeah, medical doctors overdose and killed themselves shooting up. I wonder if they ever overdose and killed some of their patients when they're shooting up. Well, I don't know. That's another story. That's called iatrogenic disease. But he listed a number of those cases. Quite a little story. I don't have a name and address, but I'll bet you if you went to Wallach on the Internet, I'll just bet you that Wallach's got a webpage, and I'll just bet you that you can get that tape called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. And anything else that Wallach might have would be worth getting. I've never heard of anything or seen anything that Wallach put out that wasn't worth at least double whatever it is he's charging for it. If you want to get in on the inside scoop, don't forget that name, Joel Wallach, W-A-L-L-A-C-H. Well, actually, what it has done is changed prescription drugs from a needs-based product to a demand-driven product, like Eggo French toaster sticks and Trix yogurt and Apple Jacks. Isn't that just special? And these commercials are so powerful, so convincing, and most of all, manipulative. If you're feeling perfectly healthy at the crack of dawn by day's end, you're going to certainly wonder if you might be suffering from one or more of the many maladies that are the subject of ads appealing to people's insecurities. Remember those Listerine ads? It isn't likely that millions of people are walking around with breath that's so bad that even their best friends are reluctant to talk about it. Nonetheless, they purchased Listerine just to be safe. Madison Avenue counts on the basic instincts of Americans to look for a quick fix, hoping that after taking in a couple of commercials, you'll begin gulping multiple pills so that you can enhance your sex life, calm your anxieties, postpone the aging process, reduce your blood pressure, heighten your concentration, build thicker bones, improve your blood flow, sleep more restfully, dull the pain in your shoulder, and slash your cholesterol to prevent heart disease. Even though, one-third of all people who die of heart disease actually have low cholesterol. One-third. Now hang on here, boys and girls, did you know that? Did you know that out of every 100 people that die from heart disease, one-third of them have low cholesterol? It's not high cholesterol. Well, isn't that just real special? Now, did they tell you that in the ad? Now, to increase the chances that you will succumb to these ads, Madison Avenue offers the lure that reels in buyers of laundry detergent and specialty coffees, free samples and trial offers. AstraZeneca's commercials pitching Nexium, the purple pill for heartburn and acid reflux disease. They end with the announcer saying, call this number for more information and a Nexium free trial offer. Don't let acid reflux eat at you. Not to be outdone, commercials for a Nexium competitor, TAP Pharmaceuticals Prevacade, make the same offer. A friend told me about Prevacade, says a middle-aged female, so I called the number and they sent me a certificate for a week's worth free. A helpful announcer follows, call today for a Prevacid free trial offer. Eli Lilly and Echoes did the same when they introduced Cialis, the latest entry into the crowded erectile dysfunction field during the 2004 Super Bowl, which more aptly might have been called the Sex Bowl. What with a halftime show highlighted by Janet Jackson's breast-bearing and commercials pushing Cialis' competitor, but Cialis, also an official partner of the PGA Tour, offered something extra for users. It was good for 36 hours. 36 hours. Wow. Lilly and Icos expected the difference. Cialis already has known in Europe as the weekend drug to appeal to their target audience, 45% of men watching the game. 45%. Now, probably most of those men, probably 90% of those men watching the Super Bowl didn't need Cialis, but they thought, ah, what the heck, why don't I give it a try? Maybe it's something that'll be better. Maybe it's something really neat. Let me experiment. Experimental drugs. Experimental legal drugs. You know, America is a nation of drug addicts. It's not just illegal drugs, boys and girls. I mean, you've got 4 million little children in public schools taking Ritalin. You've got 4 million little drug addicts growing up in our public schools. Americans are pill poppers. Americans believe that health comes from a pill. And they're drug addicts. Let's just be intelligent and realistic. But it's legal. I mean, after all, you got a prescription. It came from a legal drug dealer. The only difference between a doctor and Joe down on the corner is that one's got a license to sell drugs and the other one doesn't. And somebody says, yeah, but you know, the licensed doctor over here, you know, is safe. Oh, no, no. Wait a minute, boys and girls. No, no. The illegal drug dealers down on the corner that's selling you that crack cocaine. Listen, 6,000 Americans die every year buying those illegal drugs. 6,000. But don't let that fool you. You see, the licensed medical doctors, you know, the licensed, bonded, insured medical doctors writing the prescriptions and prescribing these drugs kill 130,000 people a year. How many more is that? 130,000. You just divide that by 6,000. Hang on. That's a 2,167% more people are killed by their local medical doctors than by Joe the drug dealer down on the street corner. All you drug dealers down on the street corner should point out, the safety record of crack cocaine is 2,167% safer buying from me than it is from buying from Marcus Welby, MD, down at Mercy Medical Center. Hey, boys and girls, I don't make these numbers up. They come right out of the CDC, the FDA, and the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Isn't that just real special? Scenes in the commercial showed a man and a woman in a bathtub. When was the last time? when was the last time you got in the bathtub with your wife, boys? A couple holding hands, a couple at a coffee bar, a couple in a car going away on a trip, and a man with his hand over a woman's eyes with the words 36 hours on the screen, with the velvety-voiced announcer in tones. This, here comes Percy Glove Tonsils, and he says, if a relaxing moment turns into the right moment, will you be ready? Introducing Cialis, the first tablet for erectile dysfunction that gives you up to 36 hours to choose the moment that's right for you and your partner. Unquote. That was Percy Glove Tonsils. Now, after reciting the obligatory warning, Cialis is not for everyone. I wonder if they said, Cialis is not for everyone. 45 people have taken Cialis and died of heart attack. Well, of course, maybe they're the people that wasn't for. Well, that's pretty obvious. Yeah, those 45 people, Cialis wasn't for everyone. The announcer ticked off possible side effects, most common and rare, including erections lasting longer than 4 hours. Though rare, require immediate medical help. What do you call your doctor and say, Doc, I got it up and I can't get it down. What do I do now? Oh, come in right away. God, maybe you'd have to go to the emergency ward. Maybe the ER. I mean, you know, this could be life-threatening. I don't know what happens when it doesn't go down. I've never had that problem. And erections lasting longer than 4 hours, though rare, require immediate medical help. And finally, the offer, ask your doctor if a free sample of prescription Cialis is right for you. So, hell, just go into your doctor and say, hey, give me a free sample. You got to try that. Yeah, you drug dealers ought to try that. You know, just go down on the street and say, hey, would you like a free sample of heroin? Hey, let me give you a free sample of crack. Hey, let me give you a free sample. Here's a free reefer. You know, go test it and see if you like it. I don't know. I've never sold drugs, so I can't tell you what the best methodologies are, but can you just picture Joe, the crack dealer, you know, in Harlem, and he's out here selling crack cocaine? Say, here, take a sample. That's the way doctors sell their drugs, free samples, advertised on television. I wonder why Joe can't get on the CBS Evening News and offer free samples of crack cocaine to his customers. Oh, I know. He's not licensed. The medical mantra, ask your doctor, has become one of Madison Avenue's most successful catchphrases ever. Ask your doctor about Limitrex, or ask your doctor about adding Plavix, or ask your doctor about getting relief from Zelnorm, or ask your doctor about Celebrex, or ask your doctor about Zocor, or ask your doctor if prescription Prevacate is right for you, or ask your doctor, ask your doctor. Well, of course, ask your local drug pusher if this drug is right for you. After all, we're selling drugs, aren't we? Hey, let me give you a little caveat here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're worldwide on the Internet. For more information, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967, and be sure to ask for the free introductory CD package while you're at it, would you? It doesn't cost you anything. And no obligation. Not gonna turn your name over to the FBI or the CIA or Homeland Security or the what do they call that, Patriot Act. Not going to call Delta Airlines or Carnival Cruises and give your name out. For more information about the law school and the law hour, just go to the website georgegordon.org. There's a bunch there about us, too. It's all self-serving, of course. We wrote it ourselves. If you want to know more about me and how bad I am, go to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, they got something to say about me, too. Or maybe the ADL or the Jewish Defense League or something like that. I think they They might have something on there about me. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Remember, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. It ain't open to the public, boys and girls. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And I got to give you another disclaimer over here, but while I'm at it, let me tell you that we're reviewing Critical Condition. It's a book on the healthcare system in America. It's an eye-opener, to say the least. And it's written by Donald Bartlett and James Steele. I wish I could read you the whole book. I can only take segments and excerpts and kind of high spots. You know, I read a book and I go through it and I read it and I mark it all up. My wife complains and she says, "My God, look at this book. Well, you've got it's half yellow, half pink, and half blue. You've got marks and notes in the margins." Yeah, that's the way I read. And I read from the back to the front because I'm so damn slow that if I read from the front to the back, I'd never get to the punchline. So I read the punchline first, and then I read from the back to the front so I can figure out, well, what's the question? I already know the answer. Critical Condition, published by Doubleday, New York. It's a must. Well, assuming that you're a doctor and you want to get paid, a doctor that wants to get paid, or if you're paying $5,000-$10,000 a year and you're getting screwed by your HMO over here and you want to know why you're getting screwed and how they're doing it to you and why, and who's paying who and how it works. And then maybe you could quit buying health insurance and you could join the 44 million of us that are living their lives every day on the critical edge of fear and anxiety with no health insurance. That's me. That's little Georgie. Don't have any health insurance at all. I'm not concerned about not getting it. I'm concerned about the damn government sticking it up my you-know-what sideways or forcing it down my throat. Now, that concerns me. So remember that the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. That's why I'm promoting this book. Not that these guys are paying me or that Doubleday has some contract with me to push their book. I don't. I wish I did. I wish they'd pay me, give me a kickback, like the pharmaceutical companies do the doctors, but they don't. Anyway, we endorse this book, and we recommend these books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners from time to time. But keep in mind that the endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or the publishers or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. I mean, they might say, "That crazy lunatic fringe nut fruitcake, why, we don't want him advertising our books." I've had that happen a couple of times. It doesn't happen very often, but once in a while. They say, "Don't mention the Law Hour and our publication in the same breath." Now, why is it that these authors and publications act that way? Well, most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And vice versa. They don't endorse the Law Hour or Editorial Review, so I'm not sitting here endorsing Doubleday. Hell, they might write bad books, I don't know, but this is one of their good ones, I'll tell you that. And these authors, Donald Bartlett and James Steele, if they heard this program, they might puke. They might get sick. They might have to call their attorneys and say, "Is there anything we can do to shut this lunatic up?" And he'll tell them, "Well, no, it's kind of out in the public domain, and after all, he's trying to sell your book." And then we get to the last paragraph, which says, "Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network, or of this local radio station, or of this publisher, or of this book, but then it ought to." So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, just go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and then send me an email request. Don't forget that free general law CD package. All right, we're getting back here to what we're talking about, Lipitor. Oh, Cialis. And when you can't get it up, go to your doctor and ask him for a free sample. Now, truth to tell, doctors sometimes have a little more independent understanding than you do about a particular drug. Let me underline that. See, I've got these underlines, and then I've got this yellow highlighter all over there. Truth to tell, the doctors sometimes have a little more independent understanding than you do about a particular drug. Now, get this. You're watching the Super Bowl. Along comes the Cialis ad. You say, "Wow, maybe that was for me. Just in case the moment was right and I wasn't ready." So you go to your doctor and say, "Hey, doc, I got to have some of this Cialis. I've got erectile dysfunction." The doctor says, "Oh, okay, Bob, here you go." After all, he makes some money off of it. "Here's a free sample. Yeah, the company rep was in last week." Hell, your doctor doesn't know any more about it than you do. He's just a drug dealer. No, it's nothing personal. It's just money. They derive their knowledge largely from the same advertisements, similar to the ones that you're watching on the Super Bowl, and from information supplied by the drug companies directly. An army of sales representatives carrying armloads of samples descend on these doctors' offices daily. That's half the reason why you patients can't get in to see your doctors, because they're in here taking the free drug samples from the drug companies to push on you people, because that's the way they make a little enough, they make a little more money, so they can buy airplanes and boats and pay their golf tee off fees. In addition, the companies hold seminars, take doctors to dinners, and distribute lucrative fees for serving as advisors. And the purpose of the ads and the personal contact is to sell a product, not to discourage its use by dwelling on what could go wrong. The drug companies spend many more billions of dollars on this marketing effort than on advertising. Hey, here's a little point for you to keep in mind. The drug companies publish the side effects of these drugs. See, they test their own drugs. Yeah, that's right. They test their own drugs. It isn't independently tested by the FDA or by some independent testing company. They want to sell Cialis, so they test their own drugs. And naturally, they write their own ads and they write their own reports and submit it to the FDA. Do you think that they're telling the FDA the truth about their drugs? No, they're lying about them. They prevaricate. They hold back information so they can get it out on the market so they can make $2 or $3 billion on this drug. Now, that being the case, though, they do publish for their own protection, their own legal protection, the side effects. So if you want to know what this drug potentially could do to you, it doesn't mean that it's going to, it just means that it could. It's done it to other people. And they even point out that, you know, sometimes it even kills people. Yeah, sometimes it even kills people. Although if it kills too many people, they pull it off the market. Oh, that's nice to know. You know, if it kills too many people, we will voluntarily withdraw it from the market in the interest of health, safety, and welfare. God, isn't that just special? Now, while physicians read many of these reports on clinical trials or studies in medical journals, no one can read and absorb all of them. There are not enough hours in a day to keep abreast of all of the studies involving all of the drugs that are available and to see all of his patients. That's why doctors are as susceptible to advertising as you are, and they always have been, even during an earlier era when ads were confined to technical journals. Such was the case back in the 1950s with a widely touted drug called Desplex, D-E-S-P-L-E-X, originally marketed to prevent abortion, miscarriage, and premature births. Well, in 1957 ad from the Grant Chemical Company of Brooklyn depicted a smiling baby with her finger inserted in her mouth and the word in large type, "Really?" The ad published in a medical journal went on to say that the drug was recommended for routine prophylaxis in all pregnancies. 96% live delivery with Desplex in one series of 1,200 patients. Bigger and stronger babies too. No gastric or other side effects with Desplex in either high or low dosage. Well, Desplex was one version of the synthetic estrogen, DES, formulated in 1938, and it was prescribed for millions of American women from 1940 to 1960s. As so often happens when a wonder drug is introduced, physicians also used it to treat a variety of other conditions. It was, they said, good to ease hot flashes and other symptoms of menopause, an early day hormone replacement therapy. They said it was good for acne and prostate cancer. They used it to stunt the growth of teenage girls who, it was feared for social reasons, were growing too tall. And they handed it out as a morning after birth control pill. They even prescribed it for women without a history of pregnancy-related problems because of the belief that it would make for healthier babies. It was a sort of super baby vitamin. Another ad promoting Desplex illustrated with a laughing infant, and it read, "Live, healthy babies," and in large block letters, "Effective and safe." Well, as it turned out, DES turned out to be anything but safe. And in 1971, the New England Journal of Medicine published a study documenting a rare form of vaginal cancer that was turning up in adolescent girls who had been exposed to DES in utero. The numbers were small but unmistakable. Sales of the drug tracked the use in the number of women who had taken DES and whose daughters, two decades later, developed vaginal or uterine cancer and other reproductive tract abnormalities. Within months of the study, the FDA, which had approved the use of DES for more than 30 years, warned physicians to stop prescribing it during pregnancy. Other medical researchers concluded that not only did the drug fail in its stated purpose of preventing miscarriages, it actually increased the miscarriage risk. There also was a greater likelihood of breast cancer, and for DES daughters, there was a greater chance of a preterm birth. They call it ectopic pregnancies and infertility. Wonder what they use for infertility in women. Well, Betsy W. Wood, the daughter of a Jacksonville, Florida surgeon and his wife, was among those. Betsy's mother had taken DES during each of her three pregnancies. Then in June of 1977, at age 20, Betsy was examined by Dr. Robert C. Nuss, a Jacksonville gynecologic oncologist who concluded that she had certain cervical changes comparable with, oh my God, dithiostilbestrol exposure. It's also known as DES exposure, but there was no evidence of cancer. To be safe, Ness recommended yearly checkups. His advice proved sound. The following year, a biopsy showed clear cell adenocarcinoma. Betsy, who was 21 years old, had part of her vagina cut out, and she was added to the National Registry of Patients Exposed to DES. Subsequent biopsies showed no recurrence of tumors, but in 1984, the cancer was back. 7 years later, she died at the age of 34. Let me put a bracket around that. Let me make a little editorial comment here. Now, boys and girls have been marrying and having sexual relations and producing babies for something like 6,000 years. The design mechanism was designed by God, explained by Moses, and is governed by a series of do's and don'ts that are designed to protect you from such subtleties as gonorrhea, syphilis, AIDS, and STDs, they call them today, sexually transmitted diseases. And pregnancy, although today it's a medical emergency, was a normal bodily function in times past. You know, kind of like going to urinate, you know, bodily function. Now, somebody came along and sold us a bill of goods. Somebody came along and said, oh my God, you're pregnant, lady? That's a medical emergency. Well, you've got to have a specialty doctor, not just any doctor, but you've got to have a gynecologist. So now we have these pediatricians, of which, by the way, 90% of pediatricians do not vaccinate their children, but all pediatricians vaccinate your children. Did you get that? 90% of the pediatricians out there practicing don't vaccinate their children, but all of the pediatricians vaccinate your children. Now, can you figure that out? Do you think maybe those pediatricians know something that you ought to know? Here's another book for you to read. It's called How to Raise a Healthy Baby in Spite of Your Pediatrician. I mean, in spite of the sucker. It's written by a guy named Robert Mendelson. Robert Mendelson. He's not a quack. He was a medical school instructor. He was a medical school professor. He was a guy that taught doctors pediatrics. He's dead now, but he wrote a series of books. You can get them in the health food store. Just go into the health food store and say you want Confessions of a Medical Heretic, and then you want How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Pediatrician by Mendelsohn. Talk about funny. Why, they're funnier than the Three Stooges. And if you didn't like the Three Stooges, he's almost as funny as Red Skelton. Not quite, but almost. And he's funnier than Wallach. Now, Wallach's funny, but this guy Mendelsohn is even funnier. Talk about comedians. These guys have missed their calling in life. I tell you, Joe Wallach should be a comedian, a stand-up comic. He should be on Letterman. He should take over Letterman. He should put Letterman. CBS ought to put Wallach on the Tonight Show or something. You know, ought to replace not Tonight Show, but Jay Leno. Yeah, he's that funny. Yeah, shucks. Those who approved this DES for widespread use ignored early studies from the 30s and 40s that showed that it led to cancer in laboratory animals. Now, why don't you go sue one of these pharmaceutical companies or sue your doctor, huh, and see where it gets you? And the FDA has never done any tests on this DES. I mean, here you got, how many people have died from the use of it? I mean, it was routinely prescribed for 30 years, and it causes cancer in people. I mean, how many people have come down with cancer, never put the connecting link with the DES? I wouldn't have known about it if I hadn't read this book, so let me give you another plug. It's called Critical Condition. Critical Condition, written by Donald Bartlett and James Steele, published by Doubleday. Just walk into Barnes & Noble and say, give me Critical Condition, written by Bartlett. It's not Bartlett. It's B-A-R-L-E-T-T, Bartlett and Steele. I think that you'll be absolutely shocked. If you're not outraged, then you're not alive. You're not breathing air. You're dead from your rectum both ways. While the dangerous side effects of drugs often take years to appear, the power of the Ask Your Doctor ads has shown up right away on the income statements of the drug companies. Tell people to ask their doctor for a drug, and they do just that. That's why companies spend up to $2 million for 30-second ads on the Super Bowl. It's why Madison Avenue jilted newspapers and magazines for television. From 97 to 2001, TV share of total drug advertising shot up from 25% to 64%, and the print media share went down accordingly. The shift paid off. A study by the General Accounting Office, the investigative arm of Congress, found that between 1999 and 2000, the number of prescriptions dispensed for the most heavily advertised drugs rose 25%, but increased only 4% for drugs that were not heavily advertised. So advertising pays off, boys and girls. You're listening and you're buying. In 2000, three oral antihistamines, Allegra, Claritin, and Zyrtec, accounted for 86% of all oral antihistamine sales, and all three of them were among the 15 most heavily advertised drugs, so the GAO reported. The makers of the three drugs also collected a record 22 letters from the FDA citing them for violating the agency's advertising regulations. So while they're advertising more, they're also lying more to you. citing them for violating the agency's advertising regulations. Nevertheless, advertising, whether truthful or not, has proven amazingly successful. Every dollar the company spent on advertising yields additional sales of more than $4. An analysis of prescription data between 1997 and 2001 found that almost half of the spending growth was attributable solely to an increase in the number of prescriptions written. In 2001, doctors prescribed 146 drugs for every 100 office visits, compared with only 109 drugs per 100 office visits in 1985. Watch for those figures to jump off the charts over the next decade for three reasons. First, the most imminent push will come as a result of decisions by the federal government and healthcare industry to lower thresholds at which drugs are prescribed. The decisions, often based on less chance conclusive research, are worth billions of dollars a year to the pharmaceutical industry. In one such instance, just one instance, health officials recommended in July of 2004 that parents whose cholesterol levels have been deemed safe should begin taking cholesterol-lowering drugs, and many of those already on medication should increase their dosage. Here, ask yourself, well, what for? I mean, if I'm not at risk, why would I take the drug? And if I'm not at risk and I don't take the drug, or even if I did take the drug, why would I want to increase the dosage? Well, the Washington Post reported that millions of Americans should consider trying to drive their cholesterol levels lower than had been previously recommended. The government said yesterday, endorsing a more aggressive strategy for fighting heart disease, the nation's leading killer. The Medicare drug provision will pump up sales in 2006, and when the baby boomers begin to retire in 2011, drug companies can look forward to an even bigger market, since older Americans consume ever larger numbers of pills. Now, let me back up here a second in my closing statement. The Washington Post reported, millions of Americans should consider trying to drive their cholesterol levels lower than had been previously recommended. I don't know why. One-third of the people that die from heart disease already have low cholesterol. You want to know what's causing heart disease? Well, listen up. It's the fat that you eat in your hamburger. We Americans consume about 247 pounds of red meat a year. Yeah, that's right, 247 pounds laced with 25%, sometimes 30% fat. Now, what did God tell you about eating fat? He said, you shall eat no manner of fat. We came along and said, God, you made a mistake. You dummy, you don't know how to make hamburger. And Armour and Kraft and the other companies do. So we're going to have fat in our hamburger, 25 or 30% worth. And that's going to make our hamburgers taste a lot better. It also gives us more heart disease. I mean, I just want to tell you, God told us, and then we said, well, God, you made a mistake, and you don't know what you're talking about. Well, then listen to McDonald's and Pfizer. Maybe they know more than God. Yeah, I'm out of time. I've got to leave you with a reminder, and then we'll take it up right here next time. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Keep in mind that The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. So if you like today's program and you'd like to download it on 32-bit, you can just go to the Internet and do just that. Or you can get 16-bit. You know, you can download, and it's free of charge. How's that for a plan? Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. Well, there's a signal says time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.